When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is still on an adventure, but he will be returning shortly, we assure you.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. This is the second part of a two-part episode we are doing on conspiracies involving unions, involving the people who love unions and the people who historically and in the present day oppose them. In our previous episode, we took a brief look at the apparently controversial history of labor unions. And it turns out that organized collective bargaining, however you feel about it, has become controversial in the U.S. due in no small part to concerted, very well conducted and orchestrated, very well funded propaganda campaigns. Bernays would be so proud, Matt. I think he would give those campaigns if he didn't see
4 out of 5 doctors.
Yes, he would give them a 4 out of 5 doctors. Don't you always wonder, like, who's the 10th dentist? Who's the 10th dentist in all those things who is like, no way, this toothpaste is garbage? it's a good question.
Well, see, and that dentist probably got paid by the campaign to say they didn't like it just to make it seem more credible. Because if it was all the dentists, it would be like, are you sure?
Yeah.
I can believe 9 out of 10.
Right. That's how you rig an election. You know what I mean? You can't have 110% of the people voting for the same candidate. Mm-hmm. But we are talking about propaganda. And, you know, this can be a bit of a touchy subject But that's the nature of this show. This can be a bit of a third rail sometimes for mass media. But here are the facts. Earlier, we asked what a union is. Usually when people talk about unions, they're not talking about necessarily like marriage or some other kind of civil union. They're talking about labor unions. They're talking about a bunch of colleagues in a given industry or, you know, a given category of industry who get together and fight for things that a lot of people take for granted nowadays, like an 8-hour workday or a weekend. We answered this question in the previous episode, but in answering this, we largely focused on the objective origin of unions. And to be absolutely fair, we need to address the imperfections that unions will inevitably encounter, like any other large collection of humans. Folks, fellow conspiracy realists, we don't care if you're talking about something like Congress, if you're talking about something like Davos, or you're talking about something like, you know, a religious organization. You get enough people together working on something and they're going to conspire. So we want to kind of open this episode by talking a little bit about those imperfections of unions, because they are human made and because of their potential to influence large scale events, there is always going to be room for crime and corruption. And, you know, Matt, it's weird. Like, you and I growing up in the U.S. in this iteration, when did you hear about unions? Was it ever big news?
Well, it was my mother. And I have a feeling you maybe learned about it in the same way through a teacher's union, which was a very common thing, at least I think when we were growing up, and still is today a very common thing, teachers' unions within the United States. Well, at least that's how I learned about them. What about you, Ben?
You know, I always, well, we come from different places, right? Like I'm familiar with the idea of teachers' unions, but back in the day, not back in the old days, like not pre-United States, but back in the day in the United States, about one third of the entirety of this country's workforce in the private sector was unionized. They were, the unions represented in one way or another the vast majority of employees in auto manufacturing and the steel industry, all the mission critical stuff like truckers, construction, food processing. And the U.S. at this point seemed pretty well on the way to a new sort of guild system, just like the guilds in Europe that led to corruption and inequality, that led to, you know, the journeyman class creating the predecessor of the union. It's very strange to think about it in big picture, and it might be difficult for a lot of us to imagine this today, but not very long ago at all, union leaders were a big, big deal. They were like international figures. They were asked about things on the news. They weighed in the same way that pundits, qualified or unqualified, will weigh in on, you know, your Fox News or your CNN or what have you today. The most, you know, there are folks like George Meany, Walter Reuther, Jimmy Hoffa is probably the most well-known today because he disappeared. I think we're legally obligated to say he disappeared about 7 years after his disappearance. He's declared legally dead. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. Remember the show The Wire? They have this great expression: whenever they want to get something done outside of the official business, when they need a favor, they talk about having suction, right? And the union leaders, for a long time, they had a lot of suction. They had a lot of influence. They had considerable economic and political influence. And this started to worry the people at the top of the business community and, you know, the people that the business community owns in large part, Congress.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think, this is the way I imagine it, Ben, tell me what you think about this, but I imagine that an individual corporation, especially one that is publicly traded, who is at its heart attempting to make profits for its shareholders, the people that own stock in it, in the corporation, and the board members who run that corporation, right? And I imagine that they feel squeezed often, or that the profits for that company and their ability to do their jobs is squeezed by two things. And maybe there's a lot more, you know, factors here, but in my mind, it's government regulation on whatever industry it is that they're functioning within, and potentially labor unions or unions that are their, as we mentioned in the last episode, their cogs that are required, their human cogs, perhaps as they see them, that are needed to create the product on which they profit. And I imagine that those two things together, you want to alleviate one or the other, or perhaps both, or there's like a desire perhaps to push back against both of those groups.
Yeah. So everybody has, regardless of where you find yourself in life, every human person will typically have multiple folks that are stakeholders or weighing in on your opinion. And it's a thing that starts when humans are in the cradle, and it continues until they expire. And the problem is that for most people, these different stakeholders often have conflicting ideas or conflicting visions about how they want the world to be. Make no mistake, for the majority of Congress, this is not a compliment, it's not a criticism, it is solely an observation. The majority of Congress has several classes of constituents. There is the average voter, and there is also the ownership class, the ones who actually pay for the campaign and do the lobbying and all that jazz. Anyway, Congress got worried about this because the people who pay them through the back door got worried. And in a surprise Shyamalan-esque twist, the U.S. Congress tried to do something about corruption in the world of unions, in the world of labor leadership. If you go back to 1957, you'll find a guy named John L. McClellan. He's a Democratic senator from Arkansas at the time, and he focused on the idea of bribery, fraud, and racketeering in some aspects of the labor movement. This was big news at the time. In 1957, it was an investigation that went on for 2 years, and it was red meat for the press. People loved it. Congress did find some things in their defense. They found corruption in several major labor organizations, and this led folks to call for government intervention in the management of unions. And so there's a crisis going on in 1957 at this time, and Congress is going back and forth. You know, they're like talking with the people who pay them, and then they're like talking to voters, I guess, when it's a good PR opportunity. And they go back and forth about different methods to improve standards and accountability for these labor organizations, because you have to realize at this point, in their heyday, labor organizations are tremendously powerful, and they are doing some things that typically before that point would be restricted to state-level actors, to the government, or to large businesses. So eventually Congress makes this system of reporting that unions are required to do. And at first, this system is like not super convenient. It's kind of like how, remember we were talking years ago about the Vatican Library, right? And there's this part of the Vatican Library that you can technically
browse, but their system is so weird. You don't have a list of what's in that library. You have to know what you're asking for. You have to ask for it specifically, which is very strange. What I'm saying is this accountability move by Congress may have been well-intentioned. There certainly was a problem, but it wasn't easy for people, pro or anti-union, to figure out what was going on with the finances. What I'm saying is Congress was doing the right thing in this moment in time, but they perhaps weren't doing it for the right reasons. Unions were riddled with bad faith actors who were doing all kinds of objectively amazing, but objectively unethical stuff. You know, like imagine, Matt, imagine you were like, what's a job you would want to have if you and I weren't hanging out? Like if you weren't in podcasting, you weren't a kick-ass executive producer, et cetera, et cetera.
Foreman on a construction site.
All right. So you're the foreman of the foreman's union. Love it. So you're the foreman of the foreman's union. And through that leadership, you can move a great many people in step. You can go do a speech, you can hold a rally, you can send out a newsletter, and you can say, you know, the right guy to be the mayor of Chicago is none other than Paul Mission Control Deccant. And then you can make that a voting block, and you can swing an election. Nothing is illegal about that. Is it ethical? Not really. But you can also do other things, right? Especially if you get organized crime involved. Matt, you and I know, and Paul, you know as well, we have a lot of friends who work in the world of production, in film, television, commercials, and so on. And there are a lot of unions in the world of production. And for the most part, those are very good things, and they need to exist. And most of the public only hears about these unions when something goes wrong.
And you may be familiar with some of these things like the Directors Guild, the Producers Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, the Teamsters Union. These are all things that are thrown around. And I think the Teamsters is probably the best known. Shout out to my friend Michael, who is currently a Teamster, who's out there in LA doing his thing. I know a couple Teamsters. They're really good folks, but the union has
stay on their good side.
Yes, I do. Because the union has a bit of a past.
Yeah, you nailed it, man. That's where we're going with this. So this will be doubtlessly familiar to all our fellow conspiracy realists who work in the production industry, however defined. One of the hard and fast rules is not to mess with the Teamsters because of strong precedent. And I mean, let's not pretend to be new here. Unions in the United States have in the past been affiliated with organized crime. Of course, not all unions, right? And certainly not all union members, most of whom are just people trying to get ahead in their life, trying to be paid a reasonable wage, spend some time with their kids, make their kids' life better than their life was. Like, that's very understandable. That's the thing all people are into.
Not have their life just be one long work day that has a few hours in between where you can sleep and see your children. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much everybody who joins a union just wants to, you know, have a nice life.
Yeah.
Or a life that's not hell.
Right. A life that doesn't feel like you're digging your own grave until the moment you're shot and put in that grave. So like, I know that sounds somewhat hyperbolic, but what we're doing is showing you the warts of an idea while we are also understanding the perspective of the people involved. Look, here's the thing. imagine you are mafioso of some sort, right? You're not just in the, you're into crime, but you like your crime organized. You know what I mean? There is nothing quite as special and powerful as inserting yourself into a union. It is a private agglomeration of many, many people who have what one thing in common, which is their industry, right? So you can move demographics in a very interesting way. You want to rig an election, control, especially a local election, control a union, have them vote in step. Do what Matt did as the foreman of the foreman's union and have everybody vote for a certain guy for mayor of Chicago. You want to make a percentage on any number of industries? Dude, you want your VIG? You want to seek some rent, as they say in the world of economics? Boom, boom, boom. You know, now we control, you know, we control the sanitation union of a city. Now we can set the prices and we can make that extra 8%.
That's right. And it's one of the major criticisms against unions that is used by a lot of union busters, which is one of the things we're going to really get into this episode, is that they can control quite a bit of money. Because there are dues paid by every member of a union, right? And the thought there, and it's been spoken about on John Oliver and a bunch of other places, there is a thought that continues that that money isn't used to defend individual union members in cases where there's an issue, which is really when you sign up for a union, that's what it's stated, right? You pay your dues so that everybody collectively has this pool of money that can be used for the for everybody's benefit, collectively and individually. But there's a lot of thought that that money, at least historically, and it has been proven that in certain cases it has been used this way, was used for nefarious purposes.
Right, yeah. It inevitably becomes embroiled in things that maybe the average union member doesn't have visibility or input on. We, just full disclosure, before we recorded part two of this, Matt and Mission Control and I, we're talking about some of the consulting videos that are created by, I can only imagine, very tone-deaf union busting consultancies. And again, there are any number of euphemisms for those organizations. Employee relations management is one. But we have to raise this point. You know, we have to separate ourselves a little bit from the propaganda. And you are absolutely right, Matt. Sometimes union corruption got ugly because after a certain threshold, you were talking about the realm of politics, and there are very, very few clean hands in that world. Very few. And this this is important for us to note, because also the interesting response to that idea of paying dues and not having representation, right? It's an echo of the idea of taxation without representation. That's the objection, right? But you also logically have to ask, if there's not a union, right? If you're just an employee negotiating individually, how much of a say do you have? You know what I mean? Take controversial political donations or political action committee donations, all this stuff. Like the average person working at a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, which is still known today for its opposition to things like marriage equality, right? Same-sex marriage. Chick-fil-A, super not on board with that. You know who they don't ask before they donate any of that money? They don't ask the kid at the drive-thru. They don't care what that kid thinks. So that kid has no input in that regard either. So what we're saying is there is a bad faith argument sometimes in that respect. That being said, I know we're going back and forth, but we have to do this. That being said, there have been dirty actions by union leaders. Perhaps the most famous is Here's our boy, Jimmy Hoffa, known mob associate. This guy was shaking the foundations of one of the most powerful and dangerous countries on the planet until he disappeared. This is a true story. This is mundane enough to be true. This guy disappeared, last seen at a parking lot in a suburban restaurant in Detroit. And he, this was July 30th, 1975. His body has never been found. There's a great deal of speculation about it. As a matter of fact, I think we do a full episode on this one, Matt. 7 years later, a judge declared him legally dead. As we record now in 2022, no one ever got charged with any sort of crime. He could have just gone off the grid. But
sometimes people disappear, Ben.
Sometimes people just go. Yeah, sometimes they just go. It's more difficult than you might think to get off the grid. We've got an episode on that, I believe. But the thing is, no one's going to get charged with the likely murder of Jimmy Hoffa. Spoiler. But it's time for us to, assuming we don't get fired for being that honest about this, it's time for us to say, yeah, it might sound like we're crapping on unions a bit. And that's not the case. We're just emphasizing that, like most human organizations, again, these are vulnerable to corruption. It's not a hot take. It's not a new take. It is simply a boring and time-tested and very true take. But at their heart, unlike other organizations, I would argue that unions have always been a noble pursuit. You know, like you Voltron up. Why be one foreman when you can be 10,000? You know, assemble the Avengers of the working class, and together we will pursue basic rights and guarantees that we could not achieve on our own. And despite all the bad press and despite, yes, genuine cases of corruption, it seems that unions are a very good thing for a great many people. But here's the thing.
I don't know. Sounds like communism to me, Ben.
Right. Here's the thing. Folks in power know this as well. They're not really chumps in the squad in this conversation. Everybody, we can assume that everybody is a rational actor, and we can assume that they are performing to the top of their intelligence. They just have very different goals. That is why union busting remains an active conspiracy today. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and then we'll dive in. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
Here's where it gets crazy. Matt!
Hey,
Pinkertons!
Yeah. Pinkertons, my favorites.
I feel like we would be good Pinkertons. I feel like we could do stuff like that.
I mean, oh god, that's really gross. But yeah, we would be pretty. I can imagine myself being a private. Oh, I mean, I've always, I don't know, being a private detective or, you know, an FBI agent, like on the case. I think it's always something that I've kind of fantasized about, and I think it's just because I had a lot of maybe comic book heroes, everybody from Batman to there's so many where I want to be investigating, and I feel like we get kind of an outlet for that here. It's not the same as being on the ground and getting my nose into things.
Yeah, the thing is, you and I right now can't roll up on some group of people, shoot someone, and then flash a badge that says I'm a podcaster. You know what I mean? That we'd have to use the other badges.
You know, if we use the word shooting as in like getting a shotgun mic out, you know, and an H6, then yeah, we could roll up on a group of people, shoot, and then say, hey, we're podcasters.
Hey, for the record, folks, we do our due diligence. We do have release forms, and that's part of why we ask that you explicitly give us permission to use, you know, whatever nickname you wish or your voice on air. That informed consent is really important to us, and it is not important to a lot of anti-union corporations.
No, it is not. Let's just jump right into union busting, Ben. Let's talk about this. This is a practice, a tale as old as time. Specifically, there are union busting efforts happening right now in the past. Let's give it a span of 2-3 years. But right now, actively, there's union busting happening at major corporations. Specifically, you've probably been reading about it occurring at Starbucks right now, Amazon right now. Mm-hmm. There's stuff at Walmart, I think, and even in some school districts in Minnesota with teachers' unions. So let's get into all of this.
Yeah. Let's, you know, I love the way you're kicking this off. So if you look at the three organizations that you just named, Matt, Starbucks, Amazon, Walmart, they are actively involved in a war for the hearts, minds, and most importantly, the labor of their employees. And yeah, look, there are a ton of laws on the books in the United States that are meant to protect organized labor. But those laws are written by people in power. So a lot of things that seem like loopholes or seem like lax enforcement, those are features. They are not bugs. If you're the average person living in the United States in 2022, you probably don't think about unions often. It comes to you as a story in like an abbreviated news clip. It's often going to be biased. It's sometimes a snooze fest. You know, we all sort of collectively fall asleep when we hear a gobbledygook of initials or numbers we don't understand. Like, what is IBEU? What is AFL-CIO? What does that mean to me? I got stuff to do. You know what I mean? I'm making a quesadilla or whatever. But the labor movement, that's a universal thing. The labor movement, as imperfect as it is, it has done great things. Again, you know, and this is probably the last time I'll mention it, but it is the reason the concept of the weekend exists. Those 2 days off, not the artist. We didn't have time to text him about unions before recording, but check in. We'll ask him. It's the reason you have paid vacation, that you have sick days, that you have some vestige of rights to privacy or used to with your employer, and on and on and on and on and on. And this is a big, 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 like Sir Mix-a-Lot level, but that's changing. It is, dude. There is what some people would call a decision point. Are you laughing at the like big butts?
Yeah, it was your delivery, man. It was perfect. Just really good.
That's Sir Mix-a-Lot. That's not us. But yeah, it turns out company towns are going to be a thing again, mm-hmm. right? We talked about that a little bit. The red flag there, or the next red flag for those, will be when the employees / residents of those company towns are paid in something that is not a state currency. So like, go live at the Tesla factory town and get paid in crypto. You know, that's going to be another red flag. Also, it turns out Pinkertons never left. Don't call it a comeback. They've been here. They make a lot of money undermining, by hook or by crook, folks who are conspiring to form unions. And that alone, to me, no matter how you feel, that alone should trigger your spidey sense. You have to ask yourself at some point, why do people in power spend so much time and so much energy fighting this? The only, like, if we walk through it, man, the only thing that I can reasonably say is that people in power want to stay in power and they don't want the proletariat messing with the status quo. You know what I mean? And it's so, yeah. It's weird, but I don't know. What do you think, Matt? Does that make sense?
Well, okay. It does make sense. I'm trying to, the whole research portion for me during these episodes has been trying to understand that question. Why are companies so against unions and organized labor within their organizations? And this is what I've come up with. You tell me what you think. I think you're dealing with operations costs for a company. So how much does it cost me to produce one thing? That is one unit of the thing that I produce, whether that's a good or a service, right? How much does it cost me as the company to produce that one thing, which then leads to how much that thing costs for the consumer, right? Because you're going to, like, if you imagine it, the markup on food or on wine or like a hotel room, the markup that you charge a customer in order to make a profit. It feels to me that labor unions, because all of your labor increases in price across the board, if a labor union comes in and successfully, you know, is able to negotiate new contracts for all the people, it pushes all the prices up in a wave. rather than one person getting a raise here, one person, you know, getting promoted here. I imagine the company worrying about how that's going to affect them down the line more, rather than spending some of the profits that they've made in the past to fight back against that potential wave. And that's the only reason I can imagine, rationally, right? If everybody's a rational actor, the way we discuss geopolitics when we're talking about North Korea or Russia or something. But, you know, I don't know. That makes me feel icky. That takes me back to my early, like, business school days, and I do not like it.
Yeah, no, you're making it. I mean, that is true, right? That is inarguably the case. If you think about it that way, if you can understand sort of the calculus of the people involved or the institutions involved, then you can also understand a little bit about why they would be so very tone deaf. And again, this is not a statement for or against unionization. You can read a lot of fantastic scholarship about the history of labor movements. You can read a lot of hilarious writing from various consulting firms. I want to draw your attention to an excellent genre of videos we found on YouTube, which are all just screen rips of very poorly done anti-unionization videos that are paid for by these corporations. We just watched a very, very disappointing one from Walmart that has some pretty racist tinges to it. And also, I gotta point out, Matt, when I'm watching these videos, I'm wondering sometimes, like, are these actors themselves in a union? Are they in the Screen Actors Guild?
I'm gonna say it was likely a non-SAG operation. I'm just gonna guess. I don't think there's a lot of most favored nations going on there, which is a term that I've had to learn after working with the Screen Actors Guild for quite a while now.
Yes, the most favored status. So we're going to introduce some examples of present union busting activities, and we're going to be objective, as objective as possible, and then we're going to maybe freestyle a little bit on the possible future and the great conflict between the owners and the workers. But before we do that, we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, check whether or not Russia has launched the nukes, and we'll be back.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
Everything's looking clear over here, Ben. Yep. Yep, gas prices are still around $4, so we're okay, I guess.
$4 kind U.S.? Yeah, we are back, and there exists in the U.S. alone a multi-million dollar industry dedicated entirely to information warfare targeted against unions. Again, it doesn't matter how any of us feel for or against the idea of labor unions, you have to acknowledge that there are people spending a lot of money trying to stop them from happening. And here's the thing, anti-union people, you'll love this, pro-union people, you'll hate this, that information warfare has been remarkably successful. Today, if you look at the, like, overall, look at the United States, look at people who work in the U.S., you'll see that about a little over 10% of them belong to a union. That is half the rate it was back in 1983, which is longer ago than it sounds, but is recent enough to be disturbing because you see this dramatic decline.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you think about that in contrast to the fact that just under half of the American workers who are not in a union say they would like to be in a union. And remember, that's an individual person that would like to be in a union. And that makes sense, right? About half of the people who are not want to be in one. But when you begin to have those conversations with other people at your workplace, 50% of whom likely, at least statistically, would want to be in a union as well, you're going to find pushback, lots of pushback, because as Ben said, it's organized. The pushback is organized.
Right. Yeah. There's not a lot of improvisation in this theater. You know, we talked about it in the past. We've got a lot of our fellow conspiracy realists who wrote in because they worked or are currently working for Amazon, right? And One of the big things that the mainstream media grappled onto, and I know it's like a controversial term to say mainstream media, but we're using the term correctly. One of the things that the media did pay attention to were the human interest stories, not the systemic structural problems
that give birth to this conflict, but stories about, you know, a worker at Amazon, an employee at Amazon, having to, like, being so pressed to make impossible quotas that they had to urinate in bottles because they literally did not have time to walk to a restroom without getting fired. The thing about those human interest stories, oh, and they are human interest stories, and they're stories of injustice. Thing about them is they're true. Amazon was like, haha, no way, Ted. And then they were like, oh, sorry, we said no way. And then later, in a third step, they're like, haha, yes way, Ted. Anyway, you know, think of it this way, says Amazon. Why wouldn't you piss in a Gatorade bottle to help your boss get to space? Kind of. For 11 minutes. You know? Priorities. Be a team player.
And then they said, party on, Garth. Party on, Wayne. That's really messed up. And here's the deal. Ultimately, if you imagine yourself in your position wherever you work, if you work, however, whatever your situation is, if you imagine yourself getting together with a bunch of your coworkers, maybe your friends outside of work, people who are all working together, and you imagine you know, fighting for something like creating a union, knowing that there is this concerted effort to prevent you from doing that pretty much across the board should be a red flag in your mind. And it doesn't matter if you want to form a union or not, you should just stick out that somebody doesn't want you to unionize whether you want to or not.
Right. Why? Right. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? If this stuff is indeed ineffective, then why are you worried about it being successful? You know what I mean? That's the question.
If the union's just going to take money from you in the form of dues and then use it for its own nefarious purposes, then why would the employer be worried?
Yeah.
That's not going to affect them.
Right. Unfortunately, there are a lot of scare tactics that don't seem to, correct me if I'm wrong here, folks, they don't seem to hold up to actual scrutiny. Like one of the big ones that has been pointed out in the past is, oh God, I should begin this by saying we have watched a great many terrible workplace training videos that are entirely about the dangers of joining a union. And they are for the most part, bad faith arguments, at least from what I can tell. And I'll be honest with you, that's my opinion. I always welcome any like correction, or if anybody can shed a new perspective on this, please do write in, call us 1-833-STD-WYTK, conspiracydieheartradio.com. But here's what I think you and I both found, Matt. There's a bit of doublethink in these arguments. There's a bit of, honestly, kind of lazy rhetoric. Like if you were a consulting firm and you're being paid to misinform people and to scare them, and that's your job, do a better job. I hope I don't sound like a jerk about it, but like take the argument that if people join some sort of labor union, their wages might go up, they might go down. You know what I mean? They might go up, but the idea of those wages going down is somewhat fanciful, because given like what you said earlier, if it decreased the cost for a company or organization, they'd be all about it. They'd be all about unions. You know what I mean? They'd be like, you have to join a union so that we don't pay you more than $10 an hour or whatever. What happened? So it doesn't make sense.
What do you get in a union? What's the primary benefit of having a union? I would say, and I think this is what union organizers would say, it's collective bargaining. So you've got a group that is bargaining with a corporation, a company, someone that sets prices for labor, rather than an individual saying, you know, and maybe an individual saying, you know, I deserve to be paid this much money, or I require to be paid this much money. It's everybody saying, let's negotiate. Let's talk about how much somebody at this level should get paid. And then what happens when they move up a level? What does that pay look like? And let's do it across the board rather than one off for everybody, depending on, you know, whose uncle they know, which is a thing, right?
Which is a thing. Nepotism is a thing. Meritocracy is something that groups of humans love to pay lip service to, but they like talking about it a lot more than they like practicing it. Let's, you know, speaking of examples, let's take some real world examples that are happening now. Earlier this March, we're recording on the very first day of April, 2022. This is not an April Fool's Day episode. Earlier this March, some folks working for Amazon in New York City at the largest Amazon warehouse in that area, they started voting on whether or not they wanted to organize and join a union. And as we're recording now, that vote, that tally is still ongoing. There was on the other side, and that one will probably go through. On the other side,
well, this is the Staten Island one?
No, there's another one in Staten Island, and we have a breaking news update on that one. That is, so the biggest one is JFK 8, number 8, and that's still going on. But the Amazon warehouse in nearby Staten Island, which is LDJ5, is, I think, we got some breaking news on that, right?
Yeah, we do. Coming out of CNBC right now, article titled Amazon Workers on Staten Island Vote for Company's First Unionized Warehouse in the U.S. And it's looking at the vote that just came in. Tally was 2,654 votes in favor of joining the union, 2,131 opposed, and there were 67 challenged ballots, but that's not enough to change, you know, the outcome of that election. So it is, it's decided that it really is. Amazon's first unionized warehouse is going to be on Staten Island as of today, Friday, April 1st. Again, not April Fools.
Again, not April Fools. But if you travel not that far away to down to Alabama in the U.S., you will see another Amazon warehouse that had a vote wherein about 53% of the workforce was against the idea. And while these, like when we're giving you these statistics, these percentages, these votes for or against things, you have to understand that the people who are working in these situations are often inundated with propaganda. They're often walking through hallways that are plastered with passive-aggressive warnings about the dangers. And yeah, you can, yeah, and while it is legally against the law for a company to fire someone or terminate them in reprisal for organizing, there's nothing to stop them from finding another reason. You know what I mean? Like, your attendance or like your, some performance metric, which can be made up and then instituted. Like, this is all about creating a need. Yeah.
It's a good reason to keep metrics on your employees, like they're robots. Hey-o. Or something, right? Amazon. But check this out. We're talking about those anti-union efforts. You can go to Engadget and you can read a story that came out also today, April 1st, 2022, titled Amazon Spent $4.3 million on Anti-Union Consultants in 2021 Alone. Some were paid $3,200 per day. And you just, you know, again, you look at, how much does it cost a company to fight against a union versus what it would actually cost them to pay everyone a living wage and, you know, things like healthcare?
Let's get into it. Let's just to interject, Matt, let's become union buster leaders. Let's start a union for union busters, and then let's make it as crooked as possible.
Yes. And then make videos. Oh, the videos will get so meta. Oh my God.
So good. Oh my gosh. All right. We're going to call Illumination Global Unlimited after this. We got to pull out our Ouija boards, but you're making a great point. You know, there's also the idea of a sunk cost fallacy, which we don't have to get into. Another very likely way people have heard about unionization recently is Starbucks. There are probably like 2 to 53 Starbucks in your town. I'm making up that number. There are a lot, is what we're saying. It was the kind of the first coffee store of its time with that level of reach. 9 of those stores voted to organize a labor union, and more than, as we record now, more than 150 are seeking to do the same thing. And Starbucks has fired some of those organizers. You could say things are reaching a boiling point. This can be seen as a resurgence of sorts, sort of a nascent new labor movement, if you wanted to use the capital letters. However, not everybody's on board with this idea. You can find cases of workers who fear unionization will be an overall negative thing for them. And we're going to be very fair in this regard. First, you have to admit that those workers might be spotlighted by consulting firms, right? You want to have that human face that says, not for me. But also, there are categories of concerns that are pretty valid. Number one, fear of reprisal. I might lose my job, or I might stay on as a kind of lame duck career. I won't get those new opportunities. I won't get promoted. I won't get a raise. And then there's, you know, like we mentioned earlier, the idea of extra cost. I have to pay these union dues. We've seen so many ads where it's like, all they do is take a cut of my paycheck and I don't get to decide where it goes or what happens to it, and cats and dogs and raining, you know, pandemonium.
Well, it is interesting how that one factors in on an individual level, because it will affect employees differently, because it is a percentage, right? Everybody pays the same percentage, but that percentage is going to get bigger and bigger depending on what your standing is in the company, right? And how much you pay. So it becomes a real thing that you have to take into consideration when you're choosing to join a union or not. So it really is something that everyone has to take into account when they're considering joining a union or not, or at least fighting for it.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also, just while we're on this thread, there's also, again, the problem of cyclical history. Guilds started out as a very good thing, right? And guilds were organized labor. Guilds quickly decayed into corruption and oligarchy. And that's not, you know, that's not even a ding on guilds. Really, that's a ding on the human species. That's why you see so many revolutionaries, just like the pigs in Animal Farm, become in practice the same thing they originally fought against.
Somebody's got to be in charge.
Right. Someone's got to be more equal than others, right? So the other concern that people would have about unions is a lack of autonomy. And that's kind of funny, I think, but it's a real concern. This is most often portrayed as an inability to negotiate employment at an individual level. It is the pursuit of happiness sold to people. It is kind of the American dream that you have to support the billionaires because one day you might also be a billionaire. You know what I mean? Don't you want to be cool?
You might work your way all the way up that ladder, right to the top. But if you let these unions get in here and define what ladders are, I mean, who knows? mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I may not be the brightest crayon in that Crayola box, but it is my God-given right to shoot myself in the foot whenever I please, you know? So Like, right? Like, hold my beer, says America.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and honestly, everybody, this is a really concerning thing, because up to this point, we've talked about the history of unions and union busting and the problems, you know, on both sides of the mind's aisle there. But when it gets really concerning, and it's when we think about the version of union busting that exists now, and then you apply future technology and things that we know that are coming to those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. This is the point where I think we're gonna have to end on this one. And you should be disturbed, by the way, regardless of how you personally feel about this stuff. Let's introduce Professor Kim Phillips Fine. Professor Phillips Fine works as a professor of history at New York University, and this professor has a quote that I think stood out to us. Here it is. There is a growing sense that the weakness we have seen in organized labor is the result of social and economic policies that have disproportionately favored the wealthy and corporations, and that is a real problem. And yet, you have to keep in mind, whenever we're pulling from an academic source, these are people who spend their lives thinking about this. They don't say this kind of stuff lightly. It's not cocktail hour chatter for them. And it doesn't really matter what Matt thinks or what Paul thinks or what I think or what you think, honestly, about whether you're for or against unions. What Professor Phillips Fine is pointing out here is that income inequality is skyrocketing. It is crazy not good for the average person, regardless, again, of almost any other attribute you could add or any way you want to slice a demographic. It's an unsustainable level. It's reaching gilded age. It is very, very bad.
Really, you just look at the average salary in any city, and then look at the average home cost in any city, the average mortgage loan that it would require to purchase a small home in any average city. In Atlanta right now, we're just at the top end of $300,000, like $400,000, right in that like upper echelon range for an average starter home. The one that I'm sitting in right now is the starter home that I was able to get after years of saving. I was able to get a giant loan that I'm going to be paying off until God knows when. But like I eked in at a time when I was not getting paid a lot of money, but I was able to just get it. To get a bank to give me the money to get in here and achieve the American dream.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's a full sleeve, and it is just like, there's no way I could do that right now. There's no way in hell I could do that in Atlanta. And Atlanta is one of the better priced places. And when it comes to bigger cities across the planet, not just in the United States. If you look at Canada, it seems to be even worse. I was reading a thing about Toronto the other day. I mean, it's just like those two things together, the average income of an individual and then what it costs for housing, even rent, if you're not owning a home, but you're just trying to pay somebody rent. It's crazy right now.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, the same applies to Australia. Housing costs are out of control. The basic stuff you need to live, not even live well, not even thrive. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? Just have some place to put your stuff, right? That has become a pipe dream for a lot of people. And unfortunately, all indications show us that it will continue to worsen until it reaches an inflection point. I brought back inflection point. I thought you would like that. That's for you, Matt.
Oh, I do. I love it. I've been waiting. Just waiting.
Oh, man. I wonder if people ever hear us off air grading our own conversations. It's hilarious. You know, we've gone through so many phases of like language that we're like, okay, we're done with that one. But inflection point will never die. We reach an inflection point about talking about inflection points. That's what happened. So yeah, it's gallows humor. You know, while people can still afford gallows, it's gallows humor. But it is true. Human beings are collectively, regardless of their political perspective, approaching something like neo-feudalism. And feudalism, just to be very clear about this, sucks for the majority of people. It's super awesome for like 2% of people, and it's absolutely terrible for everybody else. And the people who want neo-feudalism don't care. They don't care. Yeah. They think it's awesome. And from their perspective, it's rational.
Oh, absolutely. If you're in that 2%, you could just stand right up at an award ceremony, walk on stage, slap the shit out of somebody, and everything would be fine.
I did not see that one coming, Matt. Okay. Well done.
Sorry.
All right.
I'm sorry. No. Look, if we don't put it into our show right now, nobody will ever remember, because it's going to go away very soon.
True. Just,
we said something.
True. It's Chris, very, very
Chris
true,
Rock. Chris Rock is one of my heroes. Okay. But so is Will Smith. This sucks. All right.
Well, it's evident that inequality is sort of part of the war on the working class. It's evident in the increasing difficulty of entering the ownership class. It's evident in the increasing control of media, the increasing partisanship of media. It's evident in the successful institution of various laws and policies that victimize the people at the bottom of this crazy pyramid scheme that is American society. And the future of union busting is a future of surveillance. It is one of profiling and curtailing movements before they begin. We started early with the Pinkertons, and let's end with them. You know what they're into nowadays? Spoiler alert, machine learning, writing algorithms, identifying you before you become the person who says, hey, why do we keep losing our hands in the lumber mill? You know what I mean? Like, this is true stuff. This is important. And I think for us, you know, we're going a little long on this, but for us, the most important part of this, the mission critical thing, is to understand that if you are listening, the onus is on you to figure out these issues, and you have to pay careful attention to the motivations, the ulterior motives, I should say, of the people who are talking to you as though they have it all figured out. You have to question everything. And the first question you should ask when you hear something like that is why? Well, right?
Be a four-year-old. And like, seriously,
yeah,
like we should all live that way. But why, though?
But why? So, like, that's the thing. Like, if you just look at the way the chess pieces are arranged, then you can learn quite a bit about the motivations for very anti-union people and the motivations for very pro-union people and the conspiracies involved. Because there really are conspiracies involved. These are not theories. And we cannot wait to hear from you. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. What's your take? Unions, for them, against them? What are some of your favorite union conspiracies? If you are listening to this and you happen to be Jimmy Hoffa and you are, in fact, alive, drop us a line. We try to be easy to find on the internet. Facebook, here's where it gets crazy. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. If you're not into social media, we have a book coming out, hopefully, if we don't get fired for this episode. And if you don't like books and if you don't like social media, we get it. That's why we have a phone number just for you.
That's right. Use your phone to dial 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail service. You will hear Ben's voice, then you can add yours to the mix. You have 3 minutes. Please give yourself a cool nickname. Let us know if we can use your voice and message on the air. And then, there you go. Anything you want to say. Suggestions, things we've directly asked about, we want to hear from you. Jokes? You got jokes? We'll take them. We love them. We need them. Please. Gets dark around here pretty quickly and pretty often, so anything to lighten the mood would be great. If you don't want to do any of that stuff, but you still have stuff to say, and maybe you've got stuff that won't fit into a 3-minute voicemail message, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island opens its gates April 20th.